Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, the State Department. I welcome Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, formerly Senior Advisor to the Secretary of State, traveling the world these last years, now looking at two particular parts of the world that are much at issue in conversation between the United States and the Russian Federation in one instance, and the Central Asian republics in conversation with Russia, with the Russian Federation in another instance. We begin with a weather report. Mary, a very good evening to you. This is the Telegraph, London reporting, saying that the New York Times is reporting, the headline in London, "Warm weather delays," in quotes, "Russia invasion of Ukraine. Joe Biden hires meteorologists to help predict when Vladimir Putin will make his move." First graphs are even more compelling. Joe Biden has ordered meteorologists to help forecast a possible Russian invasion of Ukraine after a mild winter may have disrupted Vladimir Putin's plans. An unusually warm start to the winter might force the Kremlin to push back a ground invasion at least until February. The U.S. administration has enlisted a team of meteorologists to look closely at the weather with an eye for possible offensive. I stop there because it immediately reminds me of Dwight Eisenhower when he was commanding Chaffee in 1944 prior to the invasion of France, always calling or asking for reports from his meteorologists about a storm front sweeping across North Atlantic and heading towards the Channel and Normandy. The invasion was waiting for the weather. It's much the same experience, except it's a puzzle. How do you measure now the U.S. not knowing what's happening next, Mary, not knowing whether the weather will turn cold or not, in order to inform its diplomats how to address the crisis? Good evening to you, Mary.
Good evening, John. Well, if our diplomatic corps is worried about the weather, then I think we have even bigger problems, because Vladimir Putin has essentially gone on the offensive. He has forced the West, that willingly acquiesced, into a series of talks, the terms of which he is setting, namely to try to redefine NATO, NATO's boundaries, NATO's rules on his terms. And in doing so, because his demands are so outrageous, U.S. negotiators are starting to indicate that they are happy to give concessions on other issues, be it missile defense or other topics. And so it's a bit like Putin has punched the United States in the face, and he's waiting to see how we're responding. And it's as if we're putting our hands up and saying, don't punch again, don't punch again. So I think the weather is the least of our concerns.
The report from Geneva, this is the London Times. Again, I go to London because it's midway between the European Union and Russia and Washington and the East Coast of the United States. And at this point is not intimately involved in military preparations. That can change. Says the London Times, Sergei Ryabkov, the Russian deputy foreign minister at Geneva, insisted there were no plans to, quote, attack Ukraine. However, the minister warned of the risks if Western leaders did not, quote, take a step towards Russia and seek a compromise. The final remark I'll read from the London Times reporting, I really would not want to face a situation where NATO countries led by the United States make such a mistake. Mary, the tone is threat. The challenge is to the United States. How is the State Department to respond, given that its diplomatic writ is now challenged by Russia talking war?
Well, this is just bullying, plain and simple. Ribkov, he's just issued a threat. If you don't do what I say, there will be consequences. And bullies cannot be appeased with words and niceties and nuance. And so if the United States would like to force the Russians back into better behavior, then there have to be consequences for this kind of threat. That would mean any number of things. Immediately moving troops into the eastern part of Poland, permanent deployments in the Balkans. Or if you didn't want to move troops, you could simply arm Ukraine to the teeth. The Ukrainians have gladly accepted lethal defensive aid from the United States, but we should be pressuring our European allies like Germany to provide the same kind of equipment. Why should it only be us? The nations of Central and Eastern Europe and the Baltics are far more exposed to Russia than we are. Put the onus on them, put some real pressure on them. I note, John, just in these last hours, that there's a vote to be held on sanctioning the folks involved in the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, and Senate Democrats don't want to do it. Well, you know, exacting some consequences for that might be a good message to send, especially with congressional report. The White House could help by talking to their friends on the Hill. But what we cannot do is to exhibit weakness and to simply say, yes, let's enter a series of endless dialogues. This is exactly the strategy that the Chinese Communist Party uses to wrap us up and to extract concession after concession after concession. It didn't work in that situation, and it's not going to work with Putin's Russia.
There's a joy in archival history here, Mary, because the Cuban Missile Crisis comes to mind when I read this paragraph about the U.S. opening in Geneva in diplomatic conversation. Ms. Sherman said the U.S. was open to discussing the future placement of, quote, certain missile systems, end quote, in Europe, along the lines of the 87 Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty from which President Trump withdrew. Reminding, of course, that the legend is the reason we did not go to nuclear war in 1962 over the advanced placement of Russian intermediate missiles with nuclear warheads in Cuba was that the Kennedy brothers, Jack, not publicly, but Bobby, behind the scenes, negotiated taking our missiles out of Turkey in exchange for Khrushchev withdrawing his missiles from Cuba. Do you believe that's what the State Department would like to go forward with now, an exchange of values by saying we'll take our missiles out of Europe if you, and then fill in the blank, what, withdraw their tactical missiles from Kaliningrad? I don't know what would be a fair trade.
Well, there's no indication that the Russians take treaties seriously. You mentioned the INF treaty. Moscow broke that treaty repeatedly over a series of years. And in fact, in the Trump administration, we secured unanimous consent from all NATO countries to abrogate that treaty. Because if the two sides agree to something and one side simply ignores the text and does what they want, what's the treaty worth? It's worth nothing. So I would like to know what evidence Ms. Sherman has to trust that the Russians would even come to the table in good faith. And by the way, why are we negotiating anything at all? We're the nation's most powerful country with the world's most powerful military. We have an incredibly cohesive, well, maybe I shouldn't say incredibly cohesive, maybe it isn't, but we have a European alliance that in name at least says they share our values and our goals, so let's hold them to it. And if we deem Ukraine and the defense of Ukraine to be in our national interest, but we don't want to risk troops, then give Ukrainians the means that they need to defend themselves. It's as simple as that.
The Europeans, Mary, they're a mystery to me. I'm going to explore as best I can by talking to Paris and Berlin and London. However, the Europeans, this is their battlefield. We're arguing over their territory. We're arguing over treaty obligations that the U.S. has made since the Second War. And yet at this point, I do not hear loud voices coming out of Europe saying, stop it, you two, or in any fashion challenging the assumption that Washington speaks for Europe. What is your memory, or what do you reflect upon when you think about Washington sitting at one table, looking at Russia at another table, and no Europeans, to my knowledge, in the room.
Well, some Europeans, like the Germans, have deep political and corporate ties to Russia, and in fact would prefer to tip the balance toward them and away from us, to be perfectly frank. I think large portions, particularly of Western Europe, have fallen into a kind of strategic slumber. They became used to us leading them and providing their defense umbrella, and therefore they didn't have to spend money to protect against various and sundry threats. And instead, they use that money to build large social welfare states and to take off August in places like France. And now I think we're at a kind of a hinge point of history, as George Shultz once said, where this calculation is starting to change, and something may force it to change quite dramatically. But there's an uncertainty now, both in Europe, but I also think in the United States, in both political parties, of what exactly is the U.S. national interest here? What is our role in a conflict like the one that Russia presents to Ukraine? Because, of course, Russia has already invaded Ukraine. They're at war, Crimea and the Donbass. We can't forget that. Thousands of Ukrainians have died. What is our interest? And if the European interest is greater than ours, then we need to make it clear that we expect them to toe the line. There are those that would argue, John, that we don't want Europe falling under Moscow's sway. That would be bad for the Western alliance, and that very well could happen if we decided to pull back from our obligations or reduce troop levels, etc. So it's an uncertain period, and I'm not sure what the correct way is forward, but it's tests like this that will, I think, define this new era. And the reason we're being tested is because the administration is showing weakness and Putin is taking advantage of it.
And I puzzle what the driver is, Mary, because you're correct to saying the invasion in 2014 looked like a frozen conflict until the events of these last months with the Biden administration. Your experience of Ukraine during the Trump administration, especially the time you were at State, was this a priority to resolve Ukraine? Was there a threat from Moscow comparable to what we're hearing right now?
Well, we had established an enormous amount of leverage over Putin. We had unleashed U.S. energy supplies, which meant that we were the marginal producer setting the world price. That hurt him, because, of course, he relies on energy revenues. We had started to arm the Ukrainians, which made that conflict in eastern Ukraine more painful for the Russian troops. We had sanctioned Putin's inner circle. We had gotten together with allies and denounced and tried to hold Russians accountable for the really horrific use of chemical weapons in Syria, but also on the soil of the United Kingdom. We were pushing back against them in the cyberspace. We were creating room and an imperative for Moscow to behave better. And indeed, we were able to cooperate with Russia on certain things, like, for instance, counterterrorism. That's not impossible to do. But we had problems with them in places like, say, you know, the Arctic Council, where they were, you know, building bases up there in the Arctic and, you know, denying ship entry and doing things that we didn't like. And so we were focusing on that with our partners up north. So, you know, we were working to push Russia into a more constructive direction on a number of fronts. That's what I mean when I say that, you know, I don't, it's not bad to talk to Moscow, but you have to do it from a position of strength. And that's the missing piece, I think, in Deputy Secretary Sherman's conversations this week in Europe.
Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. We're headed to Central Asia, a vast landscape, and to the capital, Nur-Sultan of Kazakhstan, where we have fog of diplomacy, but remarks from the President Tokayev and remarks from the Kremlin. Mr. Putin, I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.